Lecture 4, The Crisis at Fort Sumter.
As we saw in our last lecture, by the 1st of February, 1861, seven slave states had left the Union. That left eight slave states loyal to the Union, and a tier of border states, Missouri, Kentucky, Maryland, and Delaware, and a tier of what were called the Upper South states, Arkansas, Tennessee, Virginia, and North Carolina. Between December 1860 and April 1861, James Buchanan and Abraham Lincoln in turn had to try to deal with the greatest crisis that the United States had ever faced, a crisis utterly unprecedented in American history. They did so in very different ways. That crisis came to center on Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor, which assumed enormous psychological importance to people in both the North and the South. In this lecture, we're going to do four things. We're going to examine efforts to defuse the crisis during the last weeks of the Buchanan administration. We're going to explore Abraham Lincoln's path regarding the crisis, both before and right after he took office. We're going to describe events at Fort Sumter and the key Northern and Confederate decisions regarding its fate as a United States installation in Charleston Harbor. And finally, we're going to address the impact of Sumter's fall on the Upper South and the importance of the Upper South's movement to join the Confederacy. How much of a difference did it make that these four states of the Upper South, Arkansas, Tennessee, Virginia, and North Carolina, joined the Confederate States of America? Let's begin with James Buchanan. Buchanan had a number of weeks in office before Abraham Lincoln would succeed him. Remember, Lincoln was elected in November of 1860, but under the old system, he wouldn't take office until early March 1861. So you have this period during which the lame duck Buchanan is presiding over an unfolding crisis regarding secession and eventually regarding what to do with Fort Sumter. James Buchanan is a classic politician in that he began in the lower ranks of the Democratic Party and then very slowly and systematically made his way up through the ranks until he was the man to select to carry the banner of the party in the 1856 presidential election. He'd been a hack, might be too harsh a word to use for Buchanan, but he'd certainly been a good, loyal Democratic soldier. He'd been one of the most prominent of the doughfaces in the North, that is, the Northern men of Southern principles, as they were called, Northern Democrats who did their best to try to smooth over differences between North and South, usually by taking positions favorable to what the slaveholding interests of the South wanted. Poor Buchanan, you really have to pity him in one sense, because he'd waited his whole life to be president, punched all the tickets he should have punched to become president, and then as soon as he did become president, this enormous sectional strife heated up. And he had to deal with problems in Kansas and Nebraska, violence there. He had to deal with the Dred Scott case before the Supreme Court. In fact, he had urged Roger B. Taney to make as broad a decision as possible in the Dred Scott case, as we talked about in our opening lecture. And then came John Brown, and then came the election of 1860 and secession, and there's poor James Buchanan sitting in the White House. You can just see him hoping that he will be able to play out his string before absolute catastrophe befalls the nation. There he is, our old doughface friend, and he says, on the one hand, I refuse to accept the legitimacy of secession. You cannot secede, he said. He said he was going to enforce all the laws in those states, all of the federal laws in his capacity as the person who should oversee that. But he also said he would do nothing to coerce the seceded states back into the Union. And now that statement upset Republicans tremendously, such as William Henry Seward and many, many others, never mind abolitionists. They said, well, Buchanan's trying to have it both ways. He said, you can't secede, but he says he won't do anything to coerce those states back into the Union. Seward sarcastically noted that Buchanan's distinction between enforcement and coercion meant that, quote, no state has the right to secede unless it wishes to, and that it is the president's duty to enforce the laws unless somebody opposes him. So the Republicans are very unhappy with James Buchanan. Buchanan blames the Republicans. He's unhappy with them. He thinks they have brought on the crisis.